Sports
with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. We, of course, love our opportunity to talk to the great man himself, Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune. He is a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend, and he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire. Check him out, aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you know the story. We're seeing a growing injury list, and it's disturbing because there's a couple guys that are added to it that you really don't want to see injured. Andrew Billings might be the most, the least talked about, but as important and essential a player as there is on this team. And now he's suddenly added to the injury list, and it gives you pause.
Yeah, we'll see what information we get out at House Hall a little bit later on today, but hopefully that's just something minor, a little maintenance, and he can be out there, because we had that very conversation, what was it, a week or two ago?
Yep.
You know, when you start talking about, you know, who the players that can't miss on this team, and I said, you know, I could totally understand an opinion where you got somebody at three like Jalen Johnson or DJ Moore that I don't have at three, but I could make a pretty good case for Billings being third on that list. And if he's not third on your list, that's fine. But if he's not in your top five, your top five's not right.
Brad, hearing from Mercedes Lewis yesterday was, I think, a little alarming, or at least concerning, when he talked about telling Shane Waldron, after Shane Waldron invoked the meeting and referenced the meeting he had with the leadership council, Mercedes Lewis talked about telling Shane Waldron basically to not walk on eggshells, not to be tentative. All the things that he revealed about that conversation did not leave people wanting to feel confident about the Bears any more confidence about the Bears. What did you make of it?
Well, I think there's if you've got open line of communication, there's an opportunity for improvement there. But communication isn't going to execute a third and one at the 45-yard line with 4 minutes to play when you're chasing 4 points. It's going to help, but you got to go out there and make it happen. Waldron seemed a little uneasy talking about things this week yesterday at the podium, but I think that's sort of who he is. There's some things they're doing well, like, I mean, Caleb's completion percentage, yards per attempt has gone up each week. Okay, you don't need to look at the numbers to it passes the eye test. I think that Caleb Williams has improved through the first 3 weeks, and that's significant for Waldron. That's significant for the Bears. And he's done so with some of these issues that we've talked about at length around him in terms of offensive line play, lack of a running game, Keenan Allen hasn't been in there, et cetera. But, man, this is another opponent, not unlike the one last week, that has got some issues. The Rams have really been struggling on defense. The Rams have got a multitude of injuries on both sides of the ball. They look like a team that's beat up depth chart wise in week 12. And it's, we haven't even gotten close to week 12, and this game comes home, and it's another team that in a stretch of games here with kind of an iffy defense. And I thought anyway, that the Bears would be able to take advantage of that last week in Indianapolis. They've got to hope that they're just a week behind getting to that, and they can play better offensive football against the Los Angeles Rams.
Brad, when you talk about the Rams, you can't help but think about, you know, the guys that aren't there. Aaron Donald retired. I know they've been drafting linemen for a while, but that impacts your defense, and certainly it's impacted their defense. They're down two receivers, Pro Bowl-level receivers. They're down three starting offensive linemen. How beaten up is this team, and what do you make of the fact that they have not played well in the Central time zone for the most part? I think they were 0-6. Now, you know, that's a tough trip from L.A. and an early morning start. Your body clock's a little messed up.
Yeah, they're missing all those guys. They're having similar issues in the run game. They have they haven't been able to run the ball well either. The Bears rank 31st, and the Rams are just ahead of them at 29th, getting about 5 yards more per game on the ground with Kyren Williams. So I thought the Rams played a really good ball game in week one at Detroit. They ended up losing that game against a difficult opponent in a tough place to go, but they made what I thought was a strong showing, and then they got their doors blown off the next week against the Arizona Cardinals. They bounced back and they upset a 49ers team that's going through some injuries. So, yeah, it's a tough road trip for the Rams. The West Coast teams really do not like those early kickoffs when they come east, especially when they get to the Eastern time zone. But even even here in Chicago, when they've got to play a little bit earlier. So I think there's a handful of factors here that should tilt things a little bit in the Bears' direction. They've got to go out and play well against an elite quarterback in Matthew Stafford, even though he's going to be shorthanded in terms of help around him on Sunday.
All right, Brad, we know you're a bottom line guy. You don't get caught up in a lot of the nonsense, but I want to ask you about a little of the nonsense yesterday, because Shane Waldron, I think if you paid attention to the substance, you weren't necessarily convinced that things were headed in the right direction. But a lot of people got caught up on the style, which was a little skittish, to be honest. Wondered what you made of Shane Waldron yesterday at the podium and what effect that could have on any, if it does at all, on Sunday's game plan.
I don't think it'll have any effect on the game plan. I think that's who he is. He's not super comfortable in that setting. Like we talked about yesterday, Caleb Williams is natural in that setting. Some coaches are very natural in that setting. Like Greg Blash could stand up there all day and be outstanding in that setting, right? And that's not probably Shane's favorite thing to do, but he does put a smile on it on his face. The concern is if he's like that when he's standing in front of a room full of players, not a room full of reporters. Then if he's nervous Nelly in front of the players, that, you know, how do you sell your game plan? How can the player be confident in it when you're potentially struggling to convey confidence in the game plan? And I'm not saying that's the case for them, but I mean, I asked him about their production in the first quarter. The Bears have scored a field goal in the first quarter so far this season. They did have a miss by Cairo on the opening possession last week in Indianapolis. It was a really long kick for him. And the Rams have only got a field goal in the first quarter this season. The Philadelphia Eagles have actually put up a goose egg in the first quarter this season. And I pointed out, hey, you're second in the NFL in scoring in the fourth quarter. The Bears have 30 points in the fourth quarter, but do you script plays? Is there something you're looking at with that? And he said that, you know, that he felt that that was scheme related, so he wasn't going to address that, whether he had a script of plays or not. Not what was on the script, but if he did or not. Because, you know, 11 plays, 32 yards before the missed field goal. At Houston, they opened up with an 11-play drive. It only got him 42 yards, and they get a field goal. So, you know, you don't want to share, that's no problem. I reach out to people I know who were in Seattle last year. Yes, Shane Waldron, unless he's changed his ways this year, does have a script of plays going into the game that they use to open things up. So I wound up getting an answer, just took a little more work.
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for 100 years, estwing.com. And Brad, I guess as I think about, and I mean, you're right, he's not a comfortable person at the podium, but he did answer some questions, and I don't know if they're real answers or he had responses. The whole running game thing is bizarre.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Khalil Herbert is your short yardage back, and that's why you kind of brought him in. We had talked to Dave earlier in the week, Wonstead, and he said that the one thing he knew from all the years he was around running backs, you like to get them lathered up. You like to get somebody up and right. You don't want to bring him in at the goal line and say, here we go, we're going to use you. If you have Roschon Johnson getting you a big first down to get you in there, then why not hand off to him? Why are you using the backs in the way you're using them in the second quarter there? And the answer apparently is that Khalil Herbert is their designated short yardage back, which seems wrong and seems kind of strange. I just wonder what your take was when he talked about the usage fact of the running back position.
I don't have an issue with Herbert being their designated short yardage goal line guy. I'm fine with that for a couple reasons. One, obviously, I don't think that's who Swift is, and they don't think that's who Swift is. That's not why they signed DeAndre Swift in free agency. Herbert's shown the ability to be proficient between the tackles the past couple seasons. And then Roschon Johnson, I think he could develop into that guy. I think you want to see a little more from him. Remember, a little bit of a taller running back, a converted quarterback at the University of Texas. And so one of the things that was a storyline for Roschon anyway last season was running behind his pads a little bit more effectively, ensuring that he wasn't upright, running with a good lean. All things that are important for running backs, and I think magnified when you talk about a goal line or short yardage situation. So Herbert being that guy, I have no issue with. I do agree with Dave's premise that, you know, to get the best out of a running back, they need to get into the flow of the game. As you said, they need to get lathered up a little bit, and that's difficult to do when you're struggling to run the football, when you're trying to run on first and 10 and then you've got second and 9. Well, it's pretty clear you're in a passing situation, and barring a big profit there on second and 9, you're probably throwing it again on third down. The Bears have really struggled on first and 10 this season, and that's kind of set everything back.
The Bears defensively have excelled at bringing pressure, whether it's from the secondary or linebackers, but that is the way that this defense has really succeeded this season. I don't know if that's the answer or the approach against Matthew Stafford, who has definitely can make every throw. It doesn't matter who he's throwing to. What do you expect defensively from the Bears in terms of an approach, Brad?
Yeah, I think they've got to pick and choose their spots there, because they ought to feel like they can win some matchups with the Rams having so many injuries on the line. The Rams have used three different starting left guards to this point. The Bears are not alone in the forest when it comes to issues and moving parts and things of that nature on the offensive line. It's happening to other teams as well. So Stafford isn't very mobile. So I think Eberflus is going to want to be aggressive at certain calculated times, but you ought to feel like with Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp out for this game that you can match up and cover real well downfield and maybe not need pressure quite as much. It all starts with stopping the run. You keep Kyren Williams in the situation that he's in right now, where he's averaging an even 3 yards a carry, and that's going to put the Rams in clear passing situations, and then you've got an advantage.
Who'd you pick, Brad?
I went back and forth on this one at the beginning of the week. I was Bears. and then I got to thinking about just kind of an unsure vibe about a lot of things up there, and I was kind of leaning toward the Rams because they're obviously very well coached with Sean McVay, and Stafford again is elite. I flipped back to the Bears last night, guys. I just think that the situation here sets up for them. The Rams have not played well on defense. Stafford's without those targets that can, you know, those guys can, on a 3rd and 8, can go for 38 yards. Those wide receivers that are going to be sidelined. So I went with the Bears. I don't know that it'll necessarily be real pretty. It doesn't have to be. I picked 17-16, guys.
Yeah.
Low-scoring game.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Good stuff, Brad.
Thank you, Bigsy. We appreciate it, bud.
See you Sunday.
Hey, have a great weekend, guys.
You too.
That is Brad Biggs. He is the football man of the Chicago Tribune. We should tell you, you're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com.
17-16, Bears over Rams, according to Brad Biggs. Low-scoring affair.
Well, I think we all kind of pick low scores, right? What is the over-under in the game, Dustin? Isn't it like 41.5 or something? Less than 42 points?
Yes, it's 41 per Circus Sports.
41, okay. Illinois. All right. I thought it was 0.5. Thought that hook. Always need the hook. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
I think when you're in the shotgun in the low red zone there, you obviously present the option of the quarterback to run it right there. You know, I know that when it comes down, everyone will want to talk about it and ask about it. The fourth down call right there where it didn't work out after we had some interior runs. You know, I know for me, you know, I can't look back at the past in that negative light. I got to look back in the past and live in the present, be better for us, learn from it, and improve there. But in terms of being in the gun versus being under center, you know, there's different styles or both. And I know when you present that extra element, because in the low red zone, defense has that extra hat down there. The quarterback in the gun now presents that opportunity.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is Shane Waldron talking yesterday. And we should let you know the Bears have had 9 plays inside the 5-yard line this season. All 9, 6 runs, 3 passes, all of them have been run out of the shotgun. They have not gone under center at all, despite where they're located. And he's telling you the reason why is the threat of the dual-purpose quarterback is somehow keeping the defense at bay.
It's the right answer, but the wrong quarterback.
Well, it just doesn't work.
It was the right answer last year. That was when you had the quarterback who you wanted to make people believe was a threat on run-pass options, RPOs, as they say.
Right.
This makes no sense when you have a quarterback in Caleb Williams who is reluctant to run the football, as we saw. He will do it if he needs to, but he shouldn't have to. And you certainly don't want to design plays in the low red zone to take advantage of his running ability when he's here because of his throwing ability. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And it certainly isn't a way to establish an identity, unless the identity you're seeking to establish is one where you are a finesse football team. And that is the only conclusion you can reach if you do this not once, not twice, not 3 times, but 9 times. 9 times you went out of the shotgun. That's a tell. That's who you are right now.
Well, that's who they are. And that, you know what they are? They're the shotgun team. They are not the power running team. And by that I just mean, listen, they went out, they got a running back who is kind of a third down back, just the way he's built and the things he can do. And they're expecting him to run out of the shotgun. And frankly, it hasn't worked. They're running from the shotgun on the season, other than a couple of quarterback plays, has not worked. It hasn't. They've been averaging like 1.5 yards a run while doing that,
so
David. That's a disaster.
It is disastrous. So you have, if you're sitting back where we are, and it's easy to do this after the fact, we realize that. But you have what I think is a conflict here, or a contradiction, in the approach. You have a general manager that tells the team flagship before Sunday's game that the talent exists on the offensive line. It's not a matter of that because they have the talent. So it must be something else. Where that's the implication. Then you have a offensive coordinator who, when you have nine straight snaps in the low red zone or in an opportunity to prove that your general manager is right and you believe just as he does that you have the talent to move the pile and to run the ball, you go out of the shotgun. So you don't have really any compatibility there. You don't have a game plan. You don't have a play calling strategy or a pattern that says that you have talent that you trust. It tells me that you don't trust the talent if you're going out of the shotgun because you don't know what you're going to be able to do behind center running the football down the Colts' throats or this week down the Rams.
Yeah, I would agree with that, David. I think that, you know, let me ask you this. Is there a methodology, is there a way to get out of what he's doing? If he believes philosophically that this is the way you have to do it, can he be told, no, that's not it. No, we're not having success doing that, so change it to this. Even if you use a different running back, even if you thought that Roschon Johnson was a tougher inside runner or could be a bigger, stronger, faster type of guy.
There's a chain of command.
Yeah.
There's got to be a chain of command. Now, Mark Grody did a great job yesterday asking Shane Waldron the question about the veto power that a head coach has. And I don't think that Shane Waldron answered it adequately. And I think what you're kind of implying, tell me if I'm wrong, is that somebody needs to sit down with the offensive coordinator after what happened last week and say, all right, we've got to do a better job of leaning into what we think is our strength, or, hey, Shane, there's talent there. Let's try to establish it, even though it doesn't seem as obvious as it should be. We need to help. We need to be more of a power football team. That's who we want to be, not the kind of finesse team that nine straight shotgun snaps implies that you are. Or that's where you're leaning towards. So I don't know if anybody's going to have that conversation, but it doesn't sound like there's reason to believe there's going to be big changes this week based on what we heard from Shane Waldron yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's just a weirdly crafted team. I don't know what to tell you. When you are insisting that it is not a problem of talent on the offensive line, then what are you really saying?
Well, what you're saying is that it's something else going on. And that's the uncomfortable portion of this week, of why yesterday stood out, or you don't want to have to look back at Thursday before the Rams game is when it was revealed through Mercedes Lewis, of all people, that there's a credibility problem and the players don't trust the coaches. When you have the leadership council, as represented by Mercedes Lewis comments, that needs to tell the coaching staff not to walk on eggshells because they have a lot of dudes in there, coach them like dudes. It's not Pop Warner. He's basically saying that, you know, stop tiptoeing. We're grown men. We can take it. Do your job. We'll do ours.
Well, I mean, I would agree with that. And that goes down to coming out of a game and saying, oh, we really like that play. You got that play got stuffed and you lost 12 yards. Let's not pretend like you like that play. That play didn't work.
But it's one thing for us to rant about that. It's one thing
and
for
it's
us.
It's totally different when the
it's
players.
It's totally
do.
Different when the call's coming inside the house.
Right. I agree.
You just don't want that to be the case because we all have been around, unfortunately, over the last 20 years or so, enough dysfunctional Bears teams to see how this begins to establish a pattern that is very difficult to. Once things start to unravel, it's hard to just reel it back in. And you don't want yesterday to be the beginning of that based on comments we heard from Mercedes Lewis after Shane Waldron introduced the idea. The first thing he said was that, boy, he had a great meeting with the leadership council.
Oh, boy. Help. All right. We've got to, do people sharpen pencils? I don't even know if you use a pencil.
No.
Maybe get your notes app opened up on your phone, because we're going to give you some information. Our guy Joe Fortenbaugh will join us next, and he'll tell you about some of these huge games in college football, about some of these huge games in the NFL. We'll talk to Joe next. Mully and Haw on the Score. Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Always a delight to talk to our man in Vegas, even if he's in Connecticut. It's Joe Fortenbaugh, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Joe, are you in Connecticut? Where are you? You're all over the country, for God's sake.
I am in Connecticut, but I am locked in. I am locked into the Rams, as I'm sure you two are as well. Big opportunity here this week. Big opportunity. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to come right out of the gate. I was looking at this trend last night. Now, I don't lean into trends a lot. I think there's little pieces of information you can glean from them, but you don't want to just bet solely based on that. But this spot the Bears have this weekend is a relatively good one. You look at the Rams. They come back from a 14-point deficit last week to come back and win that game. Last 10 years, teams that have done that, that have come back from down 14 or more to win and then gone out on the road the following week, they only cover the spread about 40% of the time. So this is where we get hot. This is where we get hot, mostly because the Rams are dealing with a bunch of injuries. But neither here nor there, we'll take them as we can get them.
Great stuff, Joe. Great insight. Okay, but you know what? Let's acknowledge the elephant in the room. Where's the stash?
Yeah, we should start with that. As we all know on this program and around the world, the mustache is tied to my survivor pick, right? So I grow it out on summer vacation, and then I come back. My wife hates it. Everyone at ESPN hates it. It's nothing but negative comments, which, by the way, people are very liberal with how much they tell me how bad the mustache looks. Like, they will just walk right up to me and tell me, man, that thing looks awful. You should shave it. Imagine if I walked around talking like that to other people. I'd be in HR in a minute. I'd be fired 90 seconds later. But yet, everyone's allowed to tell me what their thoughts are. Whatever fleeting thought comes into their little brain, they can tell me that they don't like the mustache. So long story short, I tie it to the survivor pick. I had the Bengals this past week. Nice job, Cincinnati defense, getting zero stops the whole game. And that's it. It's all she wrote, boys. All she wrote.
Looking good, though.
I like that idea. I mean, what if
I do look a lot better.
Yeah. I love the idea of walking around. Hey, you look like you could lose 10 pounds. You know,
right?
You're getting like a little big in the hips. Why don't you drop some weight? You would be thrown out on your ear. But everybody can tell you about your facial hair.
It's staggering. And it is. And here's the other part of this, the great irony. I know it looks bad. I don't do it because I think it looks good. I do it because it's a bit. I think it's funny. And the amount of people who go out of their way. Yesterday, I had someone on TV telling me, Joe, I hear the mustache is going to be going later today. As you know, both privately and publicly, I've told you how bad you look. Like, is that necessary? What a mean thing to say to someone.
Yeah, it was suggested to me that I need to shave more regularly yesterday. And I said, "What? Like, I happen to be a masculine man, maybe toxic, and I grow like barbed wire hair. What am I going to do about it?"
Mully, let me tell you something. You have been hosting radio long enough in Chicago. You don't even need to shower anymore if you don't want to. You live how you want to live.
This segment of the Joe Fortenbaugh, the handsome Joe Fortenbaugh, brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. For all the right reasons, call 866-4 Seasons. Joe, we've got a jam-packed college football schedule. Let's start with the weekend in college football. What do you got?
I'll give you the big ones first, and unfortunately, it's not a big play. We'll get to some of the ones I like more, but I know everyone's going to watch Georgia-Bama. I'm going to play Georgia here. Money coming in on Bama. It was 2 yesterday. Georgia's a favorite. It's now down to 1. Okay, you go back to August. Look-ahead line for this game was Georgia minus 3.5. Now we're down to 1. Georgia's a little bit banged up, yes. But on top of that, I think people are down on Georgia after what they saw a couple weeks ago in that Kentucky game. They still won the game. I don't know why we're always going to punish people for winning football games. That's what we want to see. You're in a dogfight. You find a way to win the game. 3-0, battle-tested. They railroaded Clemson in that neutral site game to start the season. Alabama's defense has not been tested yet. I think the secondary's got some issues. The offense is very much home run or bust, kind of like Major League Baseball now, the three true outcomes. It's either a home run, a strikeout, or a walk. So I like Georgia here. I think it's a good buy low spot. Notre Dame, Louisville, I go under 46.5 points there. Notre Dame's defense hasn't given up more than 16 all season. They've been very good. I think the Louisville offense is a little bit overrated. You look at the Georgia Tech game last week, they scored 31. Go inside the box score. They didn't score 31. The whole team scored 31. The offense needed help. 14 of those points came from a block kick that was returned and a fumble that was returned. So I think we get a real rock fight in that Louisville-Notre Dame matchup. Now, as we rip through a few others, Central Florida minus 14 over Colorado. Awful spot for Colorado. Hail Mary win last week. Kids are celebrating. They're storming the field. Great. Have fun. But now you're going out on the road for the third time in 4 weeks. You're going to the heat and humidity of Florida. You're going to play a Central Florida team that's off the bye and ranks number two in the country in rushing at 336 yards per game. They're going to run at will. So you can play the team total there as well. Central Florida over 37.5 points. I like them to cover against the Buffs as well in that game. Auburn is a pick 'em against Oklahoma. We'll play Auburn. Hold your nose. They've been terrible this year under Hugh Freeze. But Oklahoma's off a real tough loss to Tennessee, and they are banged up everywhere. Nothing but Auburn money taking advantage of all these injuries. So we're going to play Auburn. Western Michigan plus the 4 over Marshall. Good spot here for Western Michigan. They're better than people realize. They're going against a Marshall team that's about to start a conference schedule next week that has 3 monster games in a row. So a bit of a sleepy spot here. And then I think you can lay the 16 with Iowa State against Houston. Houston's dreadful this season. So to recap, we'll go Georgia minus 1, Notre Dame, Louisville under 46.5, Central Florida minus 14, as well as their team total over 37.5, Auburn in a pick 'em, Western Michigan plus 4, Iowa State minus 16.
How about the NFL?
All right. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start with the Packers and the Vikings. We're going to play over 43.5 points. Now, everyone's going to think that's crazy because the Viking defense has looked very good. Yes, it has. I think that's our opportunity here to go the other way. Minnesota's defense is top 5 in several key metrics, but they played 2 games at home. And in Vegas' eyes, that home field advantage is legitimate with all that crowd noise. Now they go on the road to Lambeau. I don't think the defense will be as good. Good, but not great. And I think we get some points here in a game where we've only got a total of 43.5. So I'd play the over in that matchup. Hold your nose on this one. It's going to make you sick. Jacksonville plus 6.5 over Houston. Look ahead line was 4. Now we're up to 6.5 because of how bad Jacksonville played Monday night against Buffalo. Keep something in mind. Jacksonville loves to play man coverage. That was a horrible mistake against Buffalo. Josh Allen eats man coverage for breakfast, okay? Not the case against Houston. CJ Stroud, very good against zone, not very good against man. Texans overvalued. We told you last week. We played Minnesota last week and we won. We're going to do it again. Jacksonville plus 6.5. Baltimore. Minus 2.5 against Buffalo. I think it's a buy low spot on Baltimore. Sunday night football, Ravens at home. They're not even laying the full 3 points for home field advantage. What's that about? Their opponent is coming off a Monday night game, for crying out loud. So it's a short week. Keep in mind, as good as Buffalo has looked and everyone's gushing about them, they beat Arizona, Miami, and Jacksonville. Those teams are 2-7 combined. Little overrated there. Would play the Ravens minus 2.5. Play the Ravens in the first half as well. It's like minus half a point, right? Or you could just play the money line. Baltimore starts fast and finishes slow, so a first half bet is a good one there as well. Washington and Arizona, 2 bets here. Over 50 points for the game. Arizona's an over team this season. Their offense can score. Their defense doesn't get stops. And Marvin Harrison props. We want Marvin Harrison over 69.5 receiving yards and to score a touchdown. It's like minus 120. Washington's defense is terrible. They can't stop anybody. Star receivers are lighting them up every week. Week 1 against Tampa Bay, Godwin and Evans both found the end zone. Week 2 against the Giants, Malik Nabers found the end zone. Week 3 last week against Jamar Chase and the Bengals, he scored a touchdown and had his best game of the season. Star receivers light up the Washington secondary, so we'll go over 50.5 points, and we'll also play Harrison props there, over 69.5 receiving yards. One last prop for you, Garrett Wilson, the Jet star wide receiver, under 59.5 yards. He's going to face Patrick Surtain, the star cornerback of the Broncos. He'll probably travel around to cover him. He's been elite against the receivers he's faced this season. So Wilson under 59.5 receiving yards. Packers Vikings over 43.5. Jags plus 6.5. Arizona, Washington, over 50.5. Marvin Harrison in that game, over 69.5 receiving yards. And yes, touchdown. Baltimore -2.5. Baltimore first half -0.5. I'm like sweating. I had a cup of coffee. Now I'm sweating with all these picks. I wish I still had the mustache to cover up the sweat on the lip. But I'll throw this your way. I'm leaning to the Bears. You can still find 2.5 out there. I think the Rams are coming in too banged up. Overvalued, very lucky last week. This is the week the Bears turn it around a little bit. We got to figure we get the offense going here at some point. Right, boys?
Eventually. That's the thought. I don't know, Joe. Not a lot of confidence here in Chicago. Great stuff, though.
Yeah, you're the best, buddy. Thank you.
Love you, boys. Love you, Chicago. We're going to turn that offense around. Stay patient. Grow out your mustaches. I'll catch you next week.
Take care, Joe.
I like his mustache. I like him without it, but Joe can wear it.
Yeah, he looks really good. He sounds even better. He's got a lot of energy. Likes the Bears. Interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
Interesting to hear how people believe that the Bears can turn things around.
Yeah. And it's a pity that you're not in that group.
I'm just a little skeptical.
I know.
I didn't expect to be, but I am in that group of skeptics this week.
I did not like the injury report. I'll say that. Let's hope that it clears up a little bit today. The Coom Dog, Ron Coomer, will join us next. We'll get a chance to talk to Ron. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.